Well, I'm glad you clapped now. I'm sitting down because I got a knee that has kind of degenerated to another stage of problems, and I can't count on it to support me. But I feel very supported by all of you here. The message this morning was already in the puppet play. Did you pay attention? Well, the mic didn't quite maybe catch everything, so I'm going to redo it for you at maybe a lower age level, but try to take care of things. A few weeks ago, when Bob asked what I was preaching on, I just said, I'm preaching on Tigger and Eeyore. And he didn't know quite what I meant, but Cheryl Lee, who puts our puppet plays together, knew immediately what stories I had in mind, and it was Elijah. Elijah, first of all, Tigger, and then Elijah as Eeyore. I had some nice little pictures of Eeyore and Tigger that I was going to play for you, and I brought it here this morning. And as I opened up the file that I brought it on, all that came up was the text box that was supposed to have pictures in it. But I think many of you know the characters of Winnie the Pooh. Do you? You know the characters of Winnie the Pooh? Yeah. Yeah. What's your favorite character? Which ones do you like? Tigger? Eeyore? Well, good. Those are the two I mentioned already. There's some Piglet. Who liked Piglet? Somebody like Piglet? Yeah. Oh, there's a Piglet girl. Oh, yeah. You like her too. Him. Yeah. Who do you like? Piglet. Kanga and Roo. Well, you know, if you haven't read the actual books by A.A. Milne, House in Pooh Corner, and the second one, it's worth a read at whatever age you are. The Walt Disney versions are fun. And the earliest ones did actually represent a lot of the original stories that A.A. Milne wrote. But there actually was a Winnie the Pooh bear in Winnipeg. And there was a little boy, Christopher Robin. If that wasn't his real name, nevertheless, there was a real boy. And they were from England. And they brought back those stories, and they had stuffed bear and stuffed animals. And Tigger and Eeyore are two opposites, aren't they? I was going to use Lindsay Toth as an illustration of Tigger. I don't see her here, but I did see her earlier. She's here. She's here. Yeah, I didn't hear her yet, but I... Amber's another good representative of Tigger. Tigger is a bouncy, bouncy, bouncy guy. Tigger is the one that drives us Eeyores nuts at times, right? Some of you who are more like Eeyore know what I mean. I mean, I try to come up with a new response to the question, how are you, every now and again. So I'll share with you the latest one some of you already heard this morning, because I've been hobbling a bit, and just this week it's gotten worse. And so what's my latest response is, how are you? Well, I've been better, but I'll get worse. That's Eeyore. But you know what? When Eeyore says that, it doesn't make him feel bad. It just makes him feel honest and realistic. Because he doesn't believe what Tiggers have to say. Because Tiggers are too unrealistic. They're optimistic when they should be realistic. And, you know, the realists are pessimists, aren't we? Well, people, when I first came out with this self-identification as Eeyore many years ago here, as some of you who've been here quite a while, you were a little bit surprised because you didn't know that side of me. And in truth, I began to share now, well, maybe 15 years ago, the struggles with depression that have been part of my life. That surprised a lot of my friends because I didn't look like you thought I should look. I didn't always look like Eeyore. Not that I bounced like Tigger. I was always too big to bounce, even from a little guy. But that is my more natural bent, my personality bent, a little bit more on the pessimistic, realistic side. So Some of you are starting to drift off again. I'd like you to just do a few Tigger bounces for me. Do that. Just joking. The story of Elijah that I want to share with you this morning was the story that was covered in the puppet play by design to reinforce what I believe God wants us to hear today. Tigger and Eeyore are both found in the person Elijah. And if I don't soon open my notes, we won't get out of here before that golf tournament on Labor Day. By the way, Bob, did you mean we're supposed to stay here till 2 o'clock on Labor Day and then go to the golf tournament? That wasn't what you meant? I like to pronounce the benediction. Just after we take up a special love offering for me. No, it doesn't work quite that way. I did notice, however, Bob, you didn't ask John and Amanda if they had extra rooms or to watch out for airline tickets to North Bay. You don't expect a lot of company there, do you? Yeah. The king's name was Ahab. The queen's name was Jezebel. You have perhaps never read the Bible story about Elijah and Ahab and Jezebel, but my guess is you know that a woman named Jezebel is not a good woman. Is that right? You knew that already. And Ahab, the king, was a bad man. So the country was Samaria, which I just need to give you a little history lesson. Samaria is sometimes called the Northern Kingdom versus the Southern Kingdom, sort of like Cold Lake North, Cold Lake South. What happened was this wonderful kingdom that God had enabled David to establish and confirm with Solomon, his son, sitting on the throne. In those early years of Solomon, when Solomon died and his son succeeded him as king, Rehoboam, he announced to the people he was going to impose higher taxes and treat them more harshly than they had experienced before under the previous administration. Guess what they did? They rebelled. And this was the nation of Israel. You've heard Pastor Bob's messages about Jacob, whose name became Israel, and about his 12 sons who became the 12 tribes of Israel. 10 of those tribes said, "We have no part with David." And they went back home and they established their own country and they got their own king. And in the Bible, it's usually called Israel. After this division between north and south, the north often gets called Israel, can also be called Samaria. The south was Judah. Benjamin was the other tribe that stayed with Judah, but Benjamin does not get much notice. Nevertheless, the south has 2 tribes and the north has 10. And Levites are scattered among them all as sort of, well, anyways, that's another story, how there's 12, 13 tribes sometimes. So the northern kingdom, or Samaria, or often called Israel after this time, that was about 960 years before Jesus was born, okay? That's when this split occurred. Ahab was the king of the northern kingdom. And probably in this message, I'll mostly refer to it as Israel, and I'm referring to the northern kingdom. But so began two kingdoms, the divided kingdoms. There'd been a few different kings now that ruled both north and south. And in the south, sometimes, Judah had a godly king. Sometimes in the south, there was a return to the true worship of God as the kings listened to the prophets, as God moved on them. And the kings in the south were the kings who had a direct lineage to King David. The kings in the north did not. Whose son was Jesus? Son of David. Jesus of the tribe of Judah. Jesus was in the lineage of King David, the kings of the south. Well, sometimes they experienced revival in the south. The north, never. It started with a king named Jeroboam. He set up his gods at the two ends of his kingdom, the border of Israel and the northern of Judah and the northern border of Israel, so that the people would not be drawn down to Jerusalem, where they had always had been the center of worship now for some time. And from Jeroboam, it went downhill. The north never had a countrywide move of God. The north hardly had even what we saw in the video about the Aboriginal communities seeking God's intervention and establishing his churches. The north had quit on God. But I want you to know this. God did not quit on Israel. Elijah was God's man for that hour. Elijah lived in Samaria, the northern kingdom. And if ever a nation needed to know God, if ever a nation encountered a time that it needed to return to God and turn to him, this was such a time. You see, King Ahab led Israel away from God in an unparalleled fashion, scriptures say. It had only been a total of maybe 60 years since the kingdoms had separated. But Ahab gets the recognition as being the worst of the bad lot. Well, 1 Kings 16, 29-33. Let me just read a few verses there. We'll have some of it all up on the screen for you too in a while. But I just wanted to know what this, I want you to hear what the scriptures have to say of their assessment. First Kings 16, verse 29, it says, "In the 38th year of Asa, king of Judah, Ahab, son of Omri, became king of Israel. And he reigned in Samaria over Israel 22 years." Samaria is also a city and an area. "Ahab, son of Omri, did more evil in the eyes of the Lord than any of those before him. He not only considered it trivial to commit the sins of Jeroboam, son of Nebat, but he also married Jezebel, daughter of Ethbaal, king of the Sidonians, and began to serve Baal and worship him." We'll get to him in a minute. "He set up an altar for Baal in the temple of Baal that he built in Samaria. Ahab also made an Asherah pole and did more to provoke the Lord, the God of Israel, to anger than did all the kings of Israel before him." Okay. That's the testimony of God's word. Did it matter to Ahab? We'll see. We'll see. He turned the people away from the worship of the true God, the God in Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to the worship of Baal, B-A-A-L. And it could be apostrophe between the two A's, and you could say Baal, but I won't try to be like that. Baal. Baal was a false god. There were idols. You could even have Baal's gods, many of them, different kinds, different regions. But Baal, with a capital B, was not a nice deity. If he was believed in. Let me just share a couple things that I've run across about Baal worship. And what King Ahab turned the country to. Listen to this description given. One significant part of Baal worship involved ritual prostitution. See, there was a male and a female god sort of alike, Baal and Asherah. You mentioned the Asherah pole. And they were fertility gods. Not just to oversee families expand, but to see the earth produce, that kind being fertile and productive. And the belief of those who worship Baal and Asherah was that they needed some encouragement to get together. Because if they got together, then things would be fertile and the money would start to roll in. and the land would be blessed. That was a belief. But as with many gods, small g, they were often preoccupied with other things. And you had to persuade them of doing these particular acts. And the way they persuaded them was through having temple prostitutes, cultic ritual prostitution. And it was just accepted as culture. It was just accepted. This is the way we do it. Don't rock the boat. That's just what is. That was the culture. That was the religion. That was the faith. I guess it maybe made Baal worship popular among certain men. But the priestesses who were used were abused sex slaves, carried off against their will in childhood, and just horribly abused by the men who used them. And know this, God was against it. There's another aspect related to Baal worship, which involves the worship of another related deity named Molech. Molech was an Ammonite counterpart to Baal. Molech demanded child sacrifice. The historical accounts reveal in some places the brazen image, the brass fashioned image of Molech was large and was open at the back, and you could create a fire in it so that the entire sculpture became exceedingly hot. And the belief was, and the requirement of that religion was, that you take your firstborn, offer it as a sacrifice to Molech, the god, if you wanted to have any future hope of prosperity and family and all of that. In the burning hot arms of an idol, your firstborn. How many of you would not be here today? I was middle child. I'm okay. Some of you wouldn't be here today. Yeah. You see, you take a path that is on a direction away from God's plans, and you stay on that path, you go farther and farther into stuff previously you never imagined you would consider, and you say, I would never do that. I would stand against it if that were so in our culture. Would you? Do you? Do I? When they offered that firstborn, the priests of the temple would have the drums beating so loudly that the cries of the baby wouldn't be heard to dissuade the parents from what they were doing. This was the kind of religion that Ahab led Israel into. Now, not everybody who lived in Israel practiced all of those things by any means, but it was part of their culture. And it was their official religion. And the worship of the true God was set aside. Okay, God is against that. Does that surprise you? Okay, it shouldn't surprise you. I think you would be against it too. But when it's in your culture, and you're part of the culture, it's so much more difficult to see. It is so easy to look back, you know, almost 2,900 years and say, that's wrong. But it's much more difficult to look around and say, that's wrong. God was against that. And he was not about to quit on his people who were living in the north. Some of you think we live in the north. That's only because you came from farther south than here. Some of you came south to get the cold lake. Regardless, wherever you came from, you're here now, and you need to know that God will not quit on you either. God will not stop. God will not quit. Same message that the puppets had, right? It's just because it's the message of the Bible. Now, Elijah, who this message was about. Elijah just kind of breaks onto the scene in chapter 17, right after that description of Ahab, the worst guy of all. Elijah just appears, and it says in chapter 17, "Now Elijah the Tishbite from Tishbe in Gilead said to Ahab, 'As the Lord, the God of Israel, lives whom I serve, there will be neither dew nor rain in the next few years except at my word.'" Elijah, we don't know anything much about him except his name, Elijah. We know something about that, the name of the town he came from, or the family background, the Tishbite. That would be like saying, you know, Tom, the Mennonite. That would be like that, sort of, only less clear. And the translation, the NIV, says he's from Tishbe in Gilead. It can also be referred to as he's from the settlers of Gilead, probably because Tishbite from Tishbe, that's kind of what you would guess, right? He's a Tishbite. He's from Tishbe. Well, he's from the settlers of Gilead. Three things we know about him: his name, a town named Tishbe, settlers of Gilead. That'd be like me saying here, okay, I'm going to stand and lean. Ted Brown. Welsh. Homesteader in Cherry Grove. Real person. Passed on a couple of years back. If that's all you knew, what would you know? You know his name, Ted Brown. Did it have any significance? Probably not. Elijah's name may have. Okay, Welsh. You watch any World Cup? Yeah, I don't think Welsh were in the World Cup, were they? Not too good on up on soccer. But if you know something about Welsh, you might know something in general about Ted Brown, because he was Welsh. Does it tell you anything specific about him? No, not really. How about homesteading Cherry Grove in the 1930s? Does that tell you something about him? Well, if you know anything about Cherry Grove in the 1930s, you would know it's a very harsh environment. And I have no idea why anyone tries to farm there. But you would know something about Ted Brown. But you wouldn't know anything really in particular. That's how it is. Elijah, he's from Tishbe, settlers of Gilead. It's like the only thing, if you know his name, you know enough about him. Elijah, you know what it means? It means Yahweh is my God. That's what it means. El is God. L-E is my God. Yah, J-A-H, referring to Yahweh. Some of the older translations of the Bible use the word Jehovah. Often our new translations just use the word Lord with all capital letters, referring to the name Yahweh, the personal name that God gave to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, the name of the promise, the name by which he revealed himself to Moses when he had to go stand before Pharaoh and say, "Who shall I tell them is sending me?" And he said, "I am who I am, Yahweh." And Elijah's name is Yahweh is my God. Okay, plunk him right back in that culture of anti-Yahweh worship, Baal worship. And he comes and he appears before the king and he says, "There's not going to be any rain until I say so." And then he disappears. Do you think it has something to do with the religion? Well, I think it has something to do with the religion. Maybe as we read the scriptures, it'll make it a little more plain to us. But he simply says, "As the Lord, the God of Israel, lives whom I serve, there will be neither dew nor rain in the next few years except at my word." If you want to hear a good message on that chapter, go on to Sylvan Lake Lions Church's website and listen to my son Tyler. He asked me if I wanted to borrow it for today. I appreciated that, and I thought about it. But I'm not going to stay in chapter 17. We're going to look at chapter 18 and 19 this morning. a confrontation between God, the true God, and Baal, the false god. So, Elijah confronts the king. And he makes the announcement, no more rain, no dew till I say so. Then chapter 17 shows where he disappears to and why he can't be found until he appears again in chapter 18 by God's command. But Ahab, did you know Ahab was a descendant of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob too? They're part of the northern kingdom, but that doesn't mean they were unrelated to those who were from Judah and Benjamin in the south. I mean, they had the same father down way back when. And Ahab should not have been surprised of a pronouncement of drought when he himself was promoting Baal worship at the behest of his wife, Jezebel, who came from a region that was prominent for that. Then, you see, because God had already announced through Moses what happens if you obey and what happens if you disobey. He'd already announced it through Moses. And if you obey, you're blessed by God in some way. And if you disobey his commands, you are cursed by God in some way. And the blessings and curses are laid out in Deuteronomy by the pen of Moses many years earlier. One of the prominent curses for disobedience, as large-scale disobedience of the nation, prominent curse was drought. Why? Because God wanted to get their attention. Once he did it with the flood, he got their attention with Noah. But when he announces ahead of time, this, if you disobey, continue in a rebellious and stubborn way, I'm going to withhold the rain. It was all written out for them in Deuteronomy. Ahab shouldn't have been surprised at the pronouncement. He might have been surprised at how long God waited. I'm sure Elijah was. But Elijah was just telling Ahab the king, this is God's word. You did what he said you shouldn't do. You're going to get what he said is coming to you. Why? Well, because he wanted to get their attention so that they would turn back to him. That's why. That's why. Now, obedience brings blessing. Disobedience brings curse. That's the message of Moses to the nation of Israel. That's still true. Obedience brings blessing. Disobedience brings curse. That's still true. We have an advantage over Ahab because we know about God's plan to reconcile us to himself through Jesus, his son. We know that Jesus took the brunt of the punishment that our faithlessness deserves. We know that. We know that Jesus not only bore the curse for us, but he became sin for us. Scriptures say, he who knew no sin became sin for us that we might become the righteousness of God. It's incredible. It's unbelievable. Except it's true. So believe. Believe it and receive the gift that none of us could do for ourselves. Righteous in the eyes of God. Obedience brings blessing. Disobedience brings curse. If we put our trust in God's gift through Jesus, Jesus has borne the curse for us, and we are set free. But what about Ahab and back in that day? Did he have any hope of obeying God? You know what? He couldn't completely, could he? What human being can completely obey God by their own strength and merits? They can't do it. So some people give up. I can do a better job pleasing a false god than I can pleasing the true God. Some people feel like that about their parents. I could never please them. And so they give up. But you know what? some things, even if they are impossible, because they are right, are worth pursuing. Some things, even if they are impossible, if they are right, they're worth doing. Pursuing holiness in our own strength, with nothing more available to us than Ahab or Elijah had available to them. But to be perfect in holiness, impossible. Should you pursue it with all your heart? Because it's right. The Old Testament laws were so valuable because they show us our shortcomings and how much we need intervention. We need what Jesus has done for us. We need God Himself to come and intervene in our lives. Then He makes us God's children. Then, with the Spirit of God within us, there's the prospect of more and more growing in obedience, growing in holiness, looking more and more like a child of God ought to look, the way God always intended us to be. We have a resource of the Holy Spirit in a way they did not have in the Old Testament. Nevertheless, it's right to pursue the right thing. Sometimes you just feel like giving up, don't you? Okay, now it's Eeyore talking, sorry. Sometimes you just feel like quitting. It's hard. Whatever it is can be hard. May not be hard for me, whatever you struggle with. And what I struggle with may not be hard for you. But there's times the Eeyore in us all wants to give up. But we need what is available to us through God, through Jesus, the Holy Spirit. We have the prospect of pleasing our Father in heaven like never before. Recently, I added a tagline to my emails that go out. What does it say there? It just automatically adds it to the end of the email. Something like, you can't go back and start again, but anyone can begin now and have a new end. You can't go back and make a new beginning. You just can't do it. But anybody can start from now and make a new end. That's hope that we have to live with. Are you sure Kieran gets to preach next Sunday, Bob? I'm not even into my introduction yet. He left already. He must have fallen asleep. As children of God, we are no longer under judgment. We're no longer under condemnation, but we're being trained and disciplined by God as our Father to become more like He's always wanted us to be. Obedience does bring blessing. Obedience affirms the relationship of who we are in Jesus Christ. Elijah, his name means Yahweh is my God. And he stands up against the king who has led the people into the worship of Baal. Into the worship of sort of anyone but Yahweh. Anything but the true God. Sort of like the way true Christian teaching and belief gets treated today in our culture. If you say, this is true, and if this is true, this is false, you're accused of being what? Intolerant. Right? Right? Yeah. You should say, this is true, but, well, that's true too. That's what's being taught. That's the approach to belief in our culture. And if our kids going through the school system buy into that, they've lost this. Because I think it was Pastor Bob had said recently, some things are not both and. Some things are either or. Three major world religions believe it's either or: Christianity, Judaism, and Islam. No proponents of either of those three major religions are pleased when somebody says, well, it's just the same God, different name. Has anybody ever said that to you? It's a lie. Baal and Yahweh are not the same God. Allah and the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ are not the same God. There can be words and ideas used to bridge, definitely. But some things are either or. And Elijah called the people to an either or. Trying to figure out how to get out of this, because I was going to read two whole chapters to you. Because that's the whole point. But then I'll probably comment, and we couldn't even get through that. Do you know the stories? A little bit of a refresher through the puppet play. Elijah comes back after the 3.5 years of drought, and he meets Ahab, and he says, Ahab says, there you are, the troubler of Israel. And Elijah says, I'm not the troubler of Israel. You're the one who's brought all these troubles on Israel. Admit it. And he says, call the people together on top of Mount Carmel. We're going to go there. And bring your 450 prophets of Baal you have. And we're going to meet together there. And we'll have, they'll build an altar, and I'll build an altar. And they can select two cows, bulls, and one of them they can select, and one will be mine. We'll lay it on the altar, but nobody put a fire under it. Nobody put any kindling under it. No, you don't make it. The God who answers by fire, he is God. Does that sound good? Well, they set it up. Big wager. That's what it was. You know, Ahab must have had a bit of a gambling spirit, don't you think? And I said, okay. Well, he wanted to get the rain. Okay, how am I going to get the rain? Okay, let's see. God who answers by fire. So the prophets of Baal, 450 of them, select their offering, build their altar, put it on the altar, and they start dancing, and they start praying to Baal, and they go round and round, and nothing's happening from morning till noon. And Elijah says to them, did Baal go away on business? Some translations say, have Elijah also saying, maybe he's occupied. Meaning like when you're on an airline and there's that little room and there's an occupied sign. That's what he meant. Maybe he's occupied. Reading material. Didn't get it. And he taunts them. And afternoon they go crazy. They start slashing themselves trying to earn Baal's attention. Trying to wake him up, because Baal was a notorious sleeper. They couldn't wake him up. That's that. Time of the evening sacrifice. That was about 3 p.m. Elijah says, okay. Calls all the people to him and said, going to do it here. He rebuilds an altar to Yahweh that was there, 12 stones. 12 stones. The whole nation of Israel, not 10 stones. He rebuilds the altar to Yahweh, the true God. Cuts up the bull, lays it on the altar, prepares it. Digs a trench around the altar. It says, bring some water. Pour it on the meat. Pour it on the altar. And three times they bring jugs of water until it was running down the altar and over the little ditch he had built around it or dug around it. Where'd they get the water in a drought? Well, somebody must have lugged it up the hill from the Mediterranean. I don't know. But they had some, and they put it on. And Elijah offers one prayer. But before he does, he makes the deal with the people. The God who answers by fire, he is God. And the people, and he challenges them, and he says, choose today who you're going to serve. Same as Joshua challenged the people. But when he challenges them before the miracle, they're quiet. You know, the crowd, probably nobody wanted to look him in the eye. Whatever Elijah looked like, you probably didn't want to look him in the eye. But they didn't answer. He said, okay, the God who answers by fire, he's the God. Okay, they said, okay, that's a good idea. What were they expecting? They wouldn't have any God after today. They could do what they wanted to. They could be their own God, right? Because Ahab's Baal, he's not going to answer by fire. Fire from heaven? So they were thinking they're going to get off scot-free and get the best deal out of this, but what happens? Elijah prays, the fire comes down from heaven, consumes the sacrifice, consumes the altar, consumes the water. And the people say, Yahweh, he is God, Yahweh, he is God. And Elijah says, take those 450 prophets of Baal, take them down the mountain, kill them. And they do. Oh, man. Isn't that an exciting story? That's the kind of story you expect to find in the Bible. It's the next chapter, which is the story I identify with much more. I don't call down fire a lot. I create some fires. But not without means. The next story. They get back to Samaria. The rains have come by Elijah's prayers, and the roads are just almost impassable. And Jezebel, who did not go up to the altar, who did not send her priests of Asherah up to the mountain because she was suspicious of what might happen, says, may the gods do so to me, deal with me ever so severely, if by this time tomorrow Elijah is not dead. And the messenger goes to Elijah in Samaria with that, and what does he do? He runs. He runs. He runs about 200 miles. He runs. You just got to read it for yourself. I'm not sure if I'm not going to get through all of that. You just got to go read it, 1 Kings 19, 18 and 19, and see how God deals with Elijah when Elijah cratered. Elijah crashed. He had nothing. He had nothing left in himself. He was so disheartened. He thought revival was coming to this land. And what happened? Jezebel still had her power. Jezebel was still there to threaten his life. If she'd wanted to kill him, she'd have sent somebody to kill him. She didn't want to kill him. She wanted to discredit him. She wanted to be able to say, look, he just ran away. What did he do? He just ran away. He ran, and he ran. He ran. But God met him. God never quit. God never quit on Elijah. God very calmly says to him, Elijah, when Elijah gets to the end of his journey by God's help, Elijah, what are you doing here? Elijah gives his complaint. They're all worshiping Baal. There's no one left of the prophets except me, and I'm no better than my fathers. Take my life. I'm done. Twice God asks him, what are you doing here, Elijah? And Elijah gives exactly word for word the same response. And what's very interesting in the story is God doesn't really argue with Elijah except on one point. God just gives him a new commission. Go back, do this, this, this. And he said, by the way, I have reserved 7,000 people in Israel whose knees have not bowed to Baal. So he corrects the one misconception Elijah has. That's how we are when we're in an Eeyore mood, right? Everything's black, everything's dark, nothing is good, and we're all absolutes of everything. Need to just take a nap like this guy in the front bench. That would be good. Sometimes that's the best thing we do. Go down, lay down, go have a sleep. Because that's exactly what Elijah did at one point, and God honored it. God blessed him. God fed him. God led him. Do you know this? God will not give up on you. God has not given up on you. You might have experienced some fantastic, amazing things. Deliverance by God. You might have not experienced what you were hoping for and been so disappointed. But you got to know, God, he hasn't quit and he hasn't given up on you. By the strength God gave him, Elijah got up, returned, began to fulfill the mission given to him again. Never says God gave him, condemned him for it. God never, there's no words of reproach. God actually gave him an extremely gracious, incredible vision of himself. Restored him. Now, there's enough here for about four more messages, so I'm going to stop, but I'm going to ask you to stand with me, invite the worship team to come. We're going to sing together just a song He knows my name. God knew the name Elijah. He knows your name.